everything. I need your love. Then troubles are easy to ride.
Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
From PTI Worldwide Headquarters in Chicago, it's Stocks and Jocks. Take it away, Chief.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Jimmy on the board. S&P futures up 53 after a big down day yesterday, and we were down last night, but we have rallied. NASDAQ futures up 342. Not sure where that's coming from. Oil's actually down a little bit from the $90 number it made it yesterday, 89.16. Do we have Professor Liu?
Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, I'm just peachy.
Well, there you go.
5:05 in the morning.
Well, I got a couple of interesting little stories for you. One is we're talking about the dumbing down of America, right? So the other night, one of our guests on Monday, John Lee, was coming down. So I said, "Hey, let's go over to this Trudeau. It's a place on the plaza here. It's kind of nice." And so we wander in, and there's this little group of people having, you know, a little company party. I don't think they were attorneys, Lou, but they, you know, they're all 25 to 32-year-old creatures. Doing a fine job, and they had hors d'oeuvres out there. So they come out with this huge thing of really good-looking, like, little cheeseburgers, and then a big thing of French fries and something else. All of a sudden, this guy comes out of the kitchen, and he's putting little cards up there saying what the stuff is. And I go, "Whoa, wait, excuse me. You really don't have to put a card in front of French fries or cheeseburgers, do you?" He goes, "Oh, yeah." I go, "You got to be kidding. If somebody that age doesn't know what French fries and a cheeseburger are, we got some problems, Lou."
Well, I mean, but there are variations. So, for example, if they've put truffle oil or something like that across the French fries, they'll put a card on them saying, you know, truffle fries. Or If the fries have been treated in some way, I can see that.
It just said French fries, and it said sliders on the cheeseburgers. Okay.
Did it say like beef sliders
no,
or chicken
sliders?
Just sliders. Well,
we always complain about going across the bridge here. You missed one last night, boy. It was as long as I've been here, Lou, and you know it's a long time. Driving home last night, they were talking about, you know, some storm coming through, and you know you always listen to that crap. And between Chicago Avenue and Division, this gust came through. It had to be 70-some miles an hour because they were talking about 80-mile-an-hour gust at Midway. And it was just coming through downtown. And there's all these people on the sidewalk. branches are flying down the street, and the building I'm going by must have had balconies. All this stuff comes flying off the balconies, and it's like it didn't bonk anybody in the head or land anybody's car.
Furniture?
No, like just cushions furniture? And, you know, plastic cups and that kind of. I mean, there wasn't like a big grill or anything, but I mean, there was stuff flying, and nobody got bonked. And then I went the streets by my house with branches down all over the place. It was nasty, nasty. I mean, 70-some miles an hour in a city, that's kind of unheard of.
I think I've told you the story where it was when I was working at McGuire Woods, and we were up about 50 floors or so in over at 77 West Wacker. And there was an alert for weather. And they said, yeah, you know, big storm coming. So I go to the west side of the building, and of course you're up that high, you can see forever. And here comes this jet black line all the way across the horizon, and it's racing toward us. I think it was a derecho, but it came across, and we looked down, and the cops were chasing people off the streets. I mean, they were literally getting out of their cars and almost pushing people into building alcoves, getting them inside buildings. And the front, I don't know what the wind gusts were, but it moved the building. When the wind storm front hit the city, we could feel the building pivoting, you know,
wow,
from the impact of the wind, and you know, stuff's flying all over the place. It probably the most, outside of a tornado that I was in the vicinity of one time, probably the most violent windstorm I've ever seen, just in terms of impact. And you could, it was just, you know, it was ominous. You just watch this thing come in.
Same kind of
thing. In terms of labeling food, I don't think I've ever seen anything quite that bizarre. I mean, maybe it was like these. They had a group from Europe for a World Cup, and I don't know if you've been following these Germans that have on Twitter that have been traveling around the United States, attending World Cup.
Well, they must have been here because there was an exhibition game. The German guys played Sunday here or Saturday.
Okay, well, they may well have been in Chicago, but these kids are they're young guys, huge fans, and they've just been writing what on Twitter what's essentially been amounting to a love letter to the United States. They've been saying, we had no idea this country was this great. All we get in Europe is negative stuff. You know, we expected to see fires and, you know, overturned cars and, you know, people sleeping on the roads and everything else. And they've been welcomed. They've been just astounded. For example, one of them said, we went to a high school in Alabama. There was something going on in Auburn, Alabama. So they went to the War Eagle Stadium there, or whatever that stadium. It's not War Eagle Stadium; it's something else. But anyway, they went to the stadium and they said, "There's nothing like this." The guy says, "I've been all over Europe. I've never seen anything like this in terms of size and spectacle and what they put on for the game." They of course have been just astounded at the food and the what they call the quality of it. They swung into a. At like 3 a.m, they were driving across to get someplace in Florida, and they were starving. They had anything to eat, and they hit a Waffle House.
I was going to say, did they, was it a Waffle House?
They hit a Waffle House and said, this is like the best food we've ever had in our lives. Yeah, we can't believe that people get to eat like this. And go, it wasn't that expensive.
No.
Anyway, it's been hilarious following.
Have you ever been to Waffle House?
These guys. Oh, yeah.
I only went to one once.
Chief, I lived in Alabama for three or four years, so yeah.
I was only in one once. I told you about that wacky story.
Who was the famous chef that unfortunately committed suicide? Well-known guy, had a whole bunch of TV programs and PBS and all that. I'll think of his name in a minute, but Jimmy may be able to look him up. But he wrote what I think is one of the most marvelous tributes to Waffle House. He was one of these Michelin guys. Brilliant.
I think you're talking about
Anthony Bourdain. Thank you. writes this. It's you can pull it up on YouTube. It's about a 3-minute discussion of Waffle House because he goes there to eat with this other chef, and it's a marvelous tribute to Waffle House on YouTube, and I encourage people to look it up. And then my last Waffle House comment before I drag us back to stupidity is that the United States, I think FEMA, the government, the Federal Energy or Emergency Management Agency, has a Waffle House index for hurricane damage in the South that they use as a measure of how severe the hurricane is. Well, because the first places that open are Waffle Houses after a hurricane comes through. They're self-contained. Waffle House is set up. They've got generators. They've got they lay in supplies for hurricanes, and you know, FEMA's people get on the scene, and if there are no Waffle Houses operating, if there are Waffle Houses in the area and they're not operating, they know that this has been a very severe
there's
storm.
No power. There's no nothing.
Well, they've got. The Waffle Houses have, in many cases, their own power. They have generators that they'll they're prepared. If they can't get those up and the places can't get open, it either means the damage is so severe that the staff can't get to the store, or it's so severe that the store itself has been basically obliterated, because they apparently Waffle Houses are set up with were run on a philosophy of, you know, unless it's like a nuclear weapon going off nearby, we're going to be up and running. We're going to be first because we're going to supply food to all the people who are coming in to help. And it really is a kind of a remarkable kind of place. Okay,
I was only in one once, and talk about a wacky morning. I go down to Miami, and I buy this T-100 pickup truck from this Cuban guy, and nicest guy. And he goes, "Well, we got to go." I said, "Okay, well, you know, do the title, and I'll drop you off." He goes, "No, Mike. We got to go to some breakfast. My wife's wants to meet you." And I go, your wife wants to meet me? He goes, "Yeah, she listens to your show all the time." I go, "You got to be kidding me." So she comes in. This guy, I'm looking at him, Lou, and I'm saying, he's an IT guy. But the guy's got forearms like Popeye. And I'm going, what does this guy really do? Turns out he teaches martial arts and takes kids to Europe for martial arts stuff every summer or something. Anyway, we meet him. His wife's adorable. And he goes, "Let me help you. If your car, this thing breaks down, you don't call your brother, you don't call your girlfriend, you call me, I'll come get you." The nicest people I've ever met.
Wow. And that's customer service.
Oh, yeah. So then...
What did you have at the Waffle House?
Oh, no. So I made it to northern Florida, crash in this place, and I leave at like 4 because the place was kind of a dump. So I make it to Georgia, and I'm starving, right? So there's an exit, you know, it says food here. I pull off, and there's one place that says breakfast. And across the street says Waffle House. So I pull into the breakfast joint, and there's only a few cars there. I walk in, and the guy goes, "Well, that'll be a $10 cover." And I say, "A cover for breakfast?" And the guy goes, "Yeah, well, the waitresses are naked." I go, "I don't want a naked waitress at 5. What's the matter
with you? I don't think this was the normal Waffle House." Yeah.
So then I go, "Screw that." So I get in the car, and I drive across the street, and I park in a Waffle House. They got a bunch of cars there. So I go in, and I sit at the counter, and there's a table. There has to be 10 ladies at the table. They go to get the check. Every one of them gets a separate check. Every one of them has a coupon. And I don't think I saw a tip at the table. So I'm sitting there eating the world's best waffle and some sausage with it or something. So I leave like a $10 tip. I thought they were going to take my picture and put it up on the wall. I mean, yeah. I thought these ladies were so damn nice, it was unbelievable. I'm sitting there, they can't make any money here. Nobody knows what the word tip is, for God's sake.
You know, it's legend. The place is legendary for the food. I mean, it's basic. You know, it's basic breakfast food. They're slinging hash, but there's lots of food. The service is direct. It's famous for that, and then it's famous for the fights that, you know, typically break out because at, you know, 1, 2, 3 in the morning, a certain percentage of your customer base is going to be absolutely hammered.
Are they 24 hours everywhere?
Yeah, I believe so.
Wow.
Like I said, that's why FEMA, I don't know if they're still using it, but they had that index because it was, those places were open, and they were typically the first places that got open.
Well, Luna, the markets...
Back to stupidity.
Yeah, the markets
are... Are we getting stupider? Yes. Dumber? stupider is even a word. Are we getting less educated? Definitely.
Why is that?
Because our schools, specifically, and I fall back on the Scott Adams teachers' unions are like the most subversive anti-American thing ever. But our school systems are not teaching the kind of consistent cultural markers that you and I grew up with that identify us as Americans and as part of American culture. I think I've told you this story before about a young attorney that worked with me in Chicago, and this was 10 years ago, who could not identify, about 12 years ago, who could not identify the Gettysburg Address.
That's something.
And I, you know, we were, and it came about because I was demonstrating voice recognition, so maybe it was longer than 12 years ago. But I just, you know, I recited, you know, 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth of this continent a new nation conceived in liberty, dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Boom. The system put it up on the screen. And I said, oh, by the way, do you recognize that? And she said, I know it's famous. And I said, okay. I said, you're an Illinois lawyer. This is one of the big ones. This is the Gettysburg Address. This is Abraham Lincoln. Do you know when this was delivered? And she said, no. And I said, do you know when the Civil War was fought? And she said, after 1900?
Oh, God.
Oh, no. And she was the number two student in her class at either Loyola or Marshall.
Question.
She was smart. She was brilliant lawyer.
The question I have is, if somebody looks at the 1930s, 40s, whatever it is, grammar school and high school, whatever you want to call it, teachings, who looks at that and says, God, this really sucks, we can't do that?
A bunch of people.
Why?
Who said, because they say it promoted racism, sexism, genderism, whatever, pick your
ism. There's as much racism, sexism, genderism now than there has been.
Well, I don't think that's not true. But they,
it's under the covers.
No, it's not. The point. I mean, you can't say that after electing Barack Obama. Although actually, he made it worse. But in any event, the theory is that these kinds of things promoted a particular worldview that the education programs in our colleges absolutely reject. And so that's why you get this terrible version of American history called the 1619 Project. This thing catches on and is promoted in schools. That is essentially an anti-American history program, and it's riddled with inaccuracies about slavery and all that. But our education programs are producing people who think that's correct, and they are minimizing the kind of common markers that are essential for a national identity.
Their multiplication and division is kind of neutral. English is kind of neutral,
but you
the
know,
actual history
well,
is somewhat
no,
neutral.
Actually, English is not neutral because if I come and say to you, to be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune or to take arms against a sea of troubles and by opposing end them. You can tell me what that's from, right?
I used to be able to.
It's Hamlet.
Yeah.
It's the soliloquy.
I knew it was the Shakespeare guy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Shakespeare, schools don't teach Shakespeare anymore.
Okay, well, you're one level of chessboard above me. I'm talking about punctuation and grammar.
Oh, well, so let's put the fact that we don't want to teach, or our education programs don't want to teach common elements like Shakespeare, because that excludes people you've never heard of who didn't write nearly as well but who were minorities or women or what, take your pick. We need to promote those people instead.
I don't have a problem including that, but why throw the other stuff out?
That's because you can't cover it all. That's one issue. The other issue is stuff like math and punctuation is hard. It requires effort. And it discriminates between people who've got something between their ears and people who don't. And so when you have a large number of students flunking math or flunking English because it's hard and they don't want to make the effort, you have parents, whomever, banging on school doors saying, I don't want you telling me my kid's an idiot because she can't learn math or he can't figure out how to diagram a sentence. That's hard work. It's hard work for the teacher. It's hard work for the students. And so it gets pushed aside because it's difficult.
I don't know if a parent will ever bitch at somebody about a grade, but now I guess it happens.
I sat in the late 90s when you haven't been through this process because you don't have kids, but I, having sat through these teacher conferences, I listened to an education PhD lecture these parents about how unfair it was that children had to memorize multiplication tables. And she said, I am here to tell you that we are going to remove the tyranny of knowing multiplication tables and the tyranny of addition and subtraction and long division.
The tyranny of knowing something.
This is the mentality that is being produced by our education programs. I'm sitting in the room with a bunch of other dads mainly, because the moms sort of thought, well, this will keep the children from feeling bad about themselves. The dads are all looking around going, this is ridiculous. Of course they have to know this stuff.
Well, but a lot of people of younger than you have never, every time they multiply 3 times 3, they pull out their calculator. This is all gradual. This isn't happening in one day.
But it's been reinforced. I promise you.
Why do you need to know the Gettysburg Address if all you got to do is click in a Gettysburg Address and there it is?
But you know, and I know that in a reference discussion, if you can't reason linearly, if you can't read text and put together a thought, a consistent line of thoughts, you're going to be in trouble when you get out in the real world. This is rolling up now in terms of commentary that you're seeing from college professors who are saying that they have kids coming into their freshman English classes in college. And I'm not talking about Tinker Toy Tech down the street. I'm talking about the Ivies. I'm talking about Princeton, Harvard, Brown, Penn, Stanford. They've got kids coming into their freshman English classes who have never read a novel because it's too hard.
How do you get into college? They sent us a list of stuff we're supposed to read before we got there.
It's too hard. Because they don't. Their attention span has deteriorated as a result of screen time.
Why do people think this is positive, though? Well, some people do, obviously.
It's outrageous. When you sit down and ask people, when was the last novel you read? Something like, there's some incredible percentage, I think it's approaching 50% of the people who are coming into these programs, again, collegiate programs, will say I don't think I've ever read one.
Well, the only thing I will say, not in defense of anything, because Kevin just texted and he's with you and he's with me on this, but it's not like some woke dude walked in a year ago and changed everything. This has been ongoing for forever. As soon as people got calculators,
that's why I said this was back in the 90s.
Yeah,
when I heard this thing, this is something that you will find you will see in our major education programs in college, and it's been going longer than that. There was this disastrous reading program that I've mentioned here called the Whole Language Reading Method. You and I grew up on something called phonics.
Yeah.
And that's how we were taught to read. We were taught to read that certain combinations of letters typically produced a certain sound.
That was fourth grade, Lou. God, I hated that.
Certain combinations of letters had certain sounds. Certain combinations of letters were sounded out so that you could recognize the word, because most children arrive in school.
They actually used to have a phonics book. Do you think they even exist anymore?
Yeah, they do exist because it's starting to come back.
Okay.
But that teaching reading that way, again, it discriminated. If you weren't the smartest or the sharpest knife in the drawer, you were going to have trouble doing that. And it forced you to sit down and memorize certain patterns and grasp certain relationships between certain letters. It forced you to, for example, understand word roots and Latin and foreign word roots so that you could reason out what a word would mean.
Well, how many
sound
people,
it out and then reason it out.
How many people,
they don't teach that anymore. Do you know what whole language does? Whole language says, we don't teach any pattern recognition. We just have them look at the page until they figure out what the words mean.
Oh God!
I mean that's, I'm paraphrasing.
The only thing is I'm going to say the first day a person got his funky old calculator, through half the people's minds were, why did I ever learn this crap? I can do it right now with this thing.
Well, okay, so
I'm never saying it's a lot of people feel that way. I mean,
Where were you when the first really available calculator, the Texas Instruments basic calculator, came out? How old were you?
I was. I don't think Texas Instruments was out when I was in college.
Are you that much younger than I am?
No, I mean, I remember that my stepfather used to bring home the adding machine. You had to use your hand, and finally they got the electric ones. So the accountants always had adding machines. Some of them were manual.
So
I'm going to say in high school, nobody had a calculator.
All right. So the first calculator, the first TI that I had and saw, and believe me, we rushed to get one. Because I think I was the last class.
For those that don't know, that was not an adding machine. It did net present values. Did all kinds of stuff. It did a lot of stuff that you could do on a slide rule. I mean, you could.
Well, and that's what we had. Well, the basic calculator that I got did the basic four functions plus square roots plus ratios, and that was it. That was all it did. It was $100.
Yeah.
My class at the Air Force Academy, I think, was the last class to be issued slide rules. We were issued a slide rule as you in-processed. And that's what you used. That calculator came out in my dually year, my freshman year. So that was 1973-74. And that's when that was the first really handheld calculator that you could buy inexpensively. We all ran out and bought one as fast as we could, all the non-math guys, because it was so much easier to use than a slide rule, and it gave you an exact number.
I never quite got the hang of a slide rule. My roommate was an absolute master at it.
I was adept at it. I had actually learned how to use one in high school.
Who's the genius that invented the slide rule, for God's sake?
Oh, I don't know.
Who'd be smart enough to invent the damn thing?
That goes way back. But it was earth-shaking. Suddenly, not only did you not, you had something that you could punch numbers into, that you could actually see the numbers, you actually got a numerical result. Slide rules didn't even give you a numerical result unless the lines happened to hit exactly. You were guessing between where that gradation fell between two lines on the scale.
Yeah, what did they call it? You had into what was the word? Interpolate.
Interpolate. Yes.
Yeah.
So, it was earth shaking, and I will guarantee you that.
Well, how did guys?
I had instructors who said, "I'm not going to allow you to use a calculator in the class. You're going to have to use the slide rule because that meant." When you were using the slide rule, you had to write stuff down because you know there's no memory in a slide rule. There was memory in a calculator. You could keep adding digits up in the calculator. You couldn't do that on the slide rule. So we had professors who were saying, "We're not going to allow you to use them."
Well, you lose track, and maybe like you say, it'll probably come back, but you lose track of. Simple stuff.
So the short answer: are we getting dumber?
Yeah,
yes.
But the simple, we don't until you age, mature. How's that better? You don't you don't get the feel of what all takes place for a project. I mean, I learned that at Pullman. You obviously did at the Air Force Academy. What is the thing? Somebody has to decide what the drawing is going to be, whether it's a bridge, a railroad car, a plane. Somebody can decide what goes in this thing. And once you decide all the parts and stuff you need, somebody's got to go, all right, how do you start? You take part A, part B, screw D, and nut C. And these two things you attach first. Then you there's a process to this. I mean, I honestly think that a lot of, you know, the thought process that I have that maybe is a little different. I mean, when we played ball, I was never good enough to be on some crazy traveling team where my parents drove me to every friggin' game, and I was the guy who called everybody up. Hey, we need 8 for basketball. I'd call 7 people or more. We got to get the idea that you had to do it yourself, that your parents didn't do that for you. That's as much of a part of the educational process as it is going playing ball, I think. I mean, how do we get 10 people in one spot when nobody's got a cell phone? The kitchen, you had to know everybody's mother. When you called, she picked up the phone in the kitchen. Well, that was not just those old idiots had to do that. There was a process to it. It's to this day, right?
And so this goes back to the point that I was making a little bit earlier about being able to read and comprehend a linear kind of process or a linear narrative to put action, reaction, consequence in the right sequence. And to understand that when you do A, B is likely to follow, and from B you have a variety of other options. All of this develops as a result of reading, for example, an extended narrative story, and it's very, very difficult. It's one of the reasons why the reading sections of the SAT and the ACT have been dumbed down significantly, because people just those skill sets aren't being taught anymore,
and nobody cares about them. That's the bad part.
We care, and we're seeing a revolution right now. I don't know
well,
how
I'm
much
saying
you
that,
guys.
The idea that nobody really cares that the SAT is easier than it was 20 years ago.
I mean you saw, and this goes to your point about changing standards. You know, the math standards don't change.
No.
You know, you still got to be able to, you can dumb down a reading section. You can't dumb down algebra. You can't dumb down calculus. Those rules are immutable and they stay the same. And as a result, it's one of the factors, what's one of the reasons why every elite prestigious school about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, because those tests were, again, separating the people who could do the work from the people who couldn't, that they got rid of those tests, and hey, they're bringing them back.
Hey, speaking of which, we got everybody wants you to talk about this gambling kid.
Oh yeah, Sorsby.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me just finish that.
Yeah, finish
thought.
That.
The math.
Then we'll wander.
The math stuff is immutable. It's a clear discriminator. It was discriminating against the wrong people, and as a result, a number of schools got rid of the test because they said this is keeping out minorities, it's keeping out poor, it's keeping out whatever. So it's too discriminatory because it's the standard, which is always the reaction of people who I think are well-meaning. But they just say, well, if the test is too hard, we don't make the teaching better. We don't teach the subject matter better. We change the test because it's too difficult. And
everybody's
that
flunking.
Mentality,
everybody's flunking. Let's change the test. Well,
that's right. That mentality is driving the modern American education system. And it combined with what I consider to be a fairly virulent anti-Americanism within our education schools, that is one of the reasons why we get people who can't identify the Gettysburg Address.
I actually don't understand the whole mentality. I mean, my mother was a child of immigrants, and the way she got equaled everybody is doing well in school. And when I went to school and learned the same thing, she goes, "I did it. You're supposed to do. What's the matter with you?" You know, there was no give there. Where did we get all the give? Well, I got a calculator. I don't have to learn that, Ed.
Oh, The give, as I said, is the result of a fairly systemic approach, philosophy that permeates our education programs. Our when I say education programs, I mean the collegiate programs in education that teach you how to teach.
Well, what do you suppose it is in law school now? You guys used to learn all these. I was never in law school, but I'm hearing you guys would go through case after case. No, why does everybody have to do that? It's all on a computer.
So that I'll digress into that in a sec, if you want, and then we can talk about Sorsby.
Yeah, let's talk about this, because talk about changing morality. You know, it is the story with this guy is exactly the same of what I hear from my friend Bill, the attorney who does all the criminal cases here in Illinois. Jammed up jails, trials out a year and a half. Same thing. Why can't they just give this guy his hearing next month? What are they waiting for? They have all the facts.
Well, the question will be how they proceed on the appeal now. So Sorsby is a quarterback who played collegiate football. He played at Cincinnati, and when he was playing at Cincinnati, he played against Texas Tech, and he had a monster game against Texas Tech, 400 yards passing. He lit the place up. Texas Tech said, you know, we want this kid. we just saw the future quarterback that we're going to run our program on. So they bought him. They I don't know how many millions they promised him under NIL money, but they bought him. So he goes to Texas Tech. He gets to Texas Tech, and now it's discovered that he's gambled thousands and thousands of bets, tens of thousands of dollars in bets.
Simple question, is he 21, and is this like a DraftKings thing? Or is he a bookie?
Well, I think it's apparent that he was gambling before he was 21. But he was placing a lot of the bets through friends.
I'm a total dummy here, but is that easy to do? Can you just say to DraftKings, yes, I'm 21, or do you have to prove it? I have no idea.
My understanding is you can just get online and go. Yeah, I certify I'm over 21. Or I'm certified that I'm of legal age.
Okay.
Whatever that is. So I mean, you don't have to. I don't think you have to send him a picture of your driver's license.
Well, that's what I was asking. I mean, you sure as hell do if you open up a securities account.
I don't think you have to do that. So in any event, he placed thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars in bets, and in some cases,
this is why he's majoring in math too, right?
He also played at Indiana before he played at Cincinnati. He bet on the team, on his own team. He bet on games that he could have participated in, although I don't know if he played any games that he actually did play in. But he was betting on, you know, the absolute no-no in gambling.
Which was first,
sports
Cincinnati
gambling.
Or the Indiana?
Indiana came first,
okay.
And then Cincinnati.
Right.
So they find this out. The kid does not admit it. He gets discovered as a result of an investigation. NC2A says, you're done. You're not playing. And we're gonna take up your case as to how much of a suspension you're actually gonna have, but you're out for the next season for sure. I mean, this is the death penalty. If you do this in pro sports, this is what got Pete Rose banned for life. And if you do this in pro sports, you're done. And this is, you know, the NC2A's bylaws are absolutely absolutely stone cold on this. No gambling. Not on your team, not on other teams, not on pro sports, not on college sports. No gambling. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
Hey, wasn't there a 6 months ago, my wacky memory says, I had a conversation with a guy named Lou. Didn't the NCAA have to come out and say it's okay for people to bet on pro games?
No.
Jimmy, look that up, will you, please? I think they did.
Their bylaws say none of that.
I think there was don't let me bug you on this one. I think they somehow had some sort of ruling that said if a kid's 23 somewhere, you can't tell him he can't bet on the Bears.
If he's an active participant,
yeah.
My understanding is that there's the bylaws are no gambling allowed. It's an absolute prohibition. That's my understanding.
Okay, we'll check that.
But in any event, he violates, he goes way past that. He violates all this. So they put him on suspension. So he sues in Texas, he's in Texas now. He sues in Texas State Court, not in Lubbock. He sues in Tarrant County, which is I think near Fort Worth. It's a couple hundred miles away, and says, I have a gambling addiction. The NC2A's bylaws, which say you can't gamble, are like a contract. I never signed anything, but it's like a contract. They promise to look out for my welfare. I promise to abide. I'd like to give me a chance to play. I promise to abide by the bylaws. Because I'm an addict, I can't be held responsible for the fact that I breached the contract. And oh, by the way, I don't think the NC2A is enforcing this in a consistent manner, or a manner that's consistent with its vision of promoting welfare.
NCAA, people were thinking that they could bet on sports games, and the NCAA last November said, no, you can't.
No,
so you're correct.
You can't.
You are correct, again.
They actually reversed a ruling on that.
Yeah, there was a ruling the other way, though, right, Jimmy?
There was. There was a ruling if you were over 21.
Right.
But Lou is correct. All the app does is ask, are you over 21? And that, you know, like on a credit card, if you are signing this, that you are legally obligated to
right.
do this, you know, all that.
I promise to pay these debts, I recognize.
Right, and
yeah.
the legalese
yeah.
that the information that I do provide to you is the truth.
Yeah. So even the average 16-year-old coming out of an inner city high school somewhere can read that and figure that out.
Yeah.
So in any event, he gets suspended. He sues. His theory is a kind of a, I think, is a breach. Well, it's argued was a breach of contract. We don't know what the basis
you
for the
decision
was.
Paid?
Pardon me.
You think he's still getting paid?
I bet your life he's getting paid. Okay. Texas Tech wants him. They're ready to. They don't care. They don't care if this guy was an organized crime figure.
Well, did they at least tell him you got to stop now, or they don't care about that?
Well, I mean, he went into rehabilitation.
Ah.
You know how well that works.
Yep.
That was like a 30-day program.
So did Art Schleister, remember?
And his argument was, I can't be held responsible because I'm an addict. The contract's not being enforced consistently, or this gambling standard isn't being enforced consistently. The NC2A is taking too harsh a look here. I've gone into rehab, so I'm trying to make myself better. I'm only going to get better if I can be around my coaches and my player buddies who will reinforce with me how important it is that I don't gamble. I mean, these are all the arguments that were made by his lawyer, and the judge bought it.
Well, it's almost the same as an alcoholic, right? Same line of reasoning.
Yeah, but we would suspend. There would be no question if it, excuse me. There would be no question if the guy was an active drug user that he would get suspended. None.
And, but wasn't
you know,
the,
addict or not, it doesn't matter.
But isn't the the real, well, not the real crux of it, is that they're not going to hear the case till after the season.
Well, and that's the kicker. So he asked for what's called a temporary injunction. The court entered the temporary injunction, which said, A, Texas Tech can't, or the NC2A cannot suspend this kid for more than two games, and B, the kid's got to go through rehab, and he's got to attend these sessions, and he's got to report what he's doing, which is, I mean, crazy for a court to do that. And C, the NC2A may not enforce its rule of restitution. So the rule of restitution, this is a big one, is one of the NC2A's principal enforcement mechanisms, which says, listen, if you convince some crooked local judge somewhere to enjoin our enforcement action, and you're allowed to play, if that injunction later gets lifted, if we reverse that injunction or it gets vacated or otherwise voided, we can come back against your school and we can enforce the death penalty up to and including the death penalty on your school for allowing you to play.
Would you forfeit the games too?
Oh, yeah. Forfeit games,
okay.
Fines, playoff eligibility, TV revenue, we can go all the way up the scale. That's
Texas,
the rule
Texas
of restitution.
Tech is trying to break into the elite here, correct?
Yes, they are. That's exactly what this is. So the rule of restitution is a very powerful deterrent. Even if you win the injunction, you run the risk of having a very serious penalty slapped on you later on if you play the kid. And the court said you can't do that. So you literally have a situation where the NC2A is actually powerless here. What is happening in light of that is a bunch of schools have looked around. I say a bunch. Nebraska, Utah, a number of other places.
Georgia's one of them.
Pardon me?
Georgia's one of them.
Georgia, some of the SEC schools,
yeah,
immediately stepped up and said, you know what? This is the stupidest ruling. We are getting dumber. This is the dumbest ruling we've ever seen. If this kid plays one game, we are taking Texas Tech off our scheduling options. We will not schedule football games against that program.
But they didn't say we're canceling a game this year, did they?
Oh, yeah.
Seemed like they were to not schedule them going forward. No, I didn't read the part about if they had a game this year or canceling it.
I've seen stuff coming out now that where schools are saying if that kid is their quarterback, we are not going to play them. We will forfeit. And this is not just being done on an individual school basis now. I mean, it took the conferences a while to get into the action, but you're seeing conferences now meeting to say, what are we going to do? We're going to forbid our schools from scheduling these guys. And for this year, if that kid sets foot on a football field that we are on, we are forfeiting the game. And that's a very powerful.
All right, so how would that work? They try and reschedule you, and they're not going to have their home gate there of 100,000 people. This kid walk out and every turn around and walk off.
excuse me, I'm sorry, I've got something in my throat. We'll have to see, but that's
you give 100,000 people or $100 a ticket back. I'd like to see that in today's world.
Tom, it'll disappear off if the conferences make that decision, those games disappear and they'll disappear in advance. They'll reschedule
They'll reschedule somebody. That part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they'll just put the schedule in, and so that message has not gone out yet. But if it does, it's going to get real interesting, because then I promise you, that kid will be back in Texas State Court trying to force these other conferences, because they'll play in that state. The SEC obviously plays in Texas. They'll play in that state, and they'll go right back in and say, look what's happening. You've got to take jurisdiction over these conferences and force them to play us. That's how this is going to go.
What conference is Texas Tech in? I should know this, but what are they in?
With Texas Tech?
Yeah, what is their conference saying about all this?
What are they, Big 12, I think?
Okay.
So NC2A immediately appeals, and they've asked for an expedited appeal. First date on the appellate calendar for this case is next February, I think. And so the short answer is if the injunction holds, this kid gets all the way through the season, which is all he wants, because he wants to enter the draft next year, not this year. He gets all the way through the season and plays, and then he goes off to the NFL, and the appellate court gets the case. The appellate court says the case is moot. Kid's gone. He's not going to play anymore. The problem solves itself. Goodbye.
Right, well, now, I don't know how these contracts are, but let's say when you say the kid's making $1 million or $2 million, let's pick a number. Texas Tech can't pay him that. So somebody is. If it's Under Armour.
Texas Tech might be able to pay it to him.
Well, if it's they probably have strung together some sponsors.
If it's a legitimate sponsorship deal, it'll be approved under the House rules. And if it's it'll come in outside the cap, the $20 million cap that each of these schools has. If it's not a legitimate sponsorship deal, it can come in under the school's direct payment, which is capped at $20 million for all sports.
All right. So if the coach hooks up PTI Securities or Lou Law to pay this kid $1 million for, and all of a sudden I go, I really don't want a kid with all these gambling issues being the face of PTI. Can I dump
that? That might provide that'll you know there's a conduct clause written into that NIL agreement that if the kid goes out and you know torches a church or something, the all bets are off. I would assume this would fall under the ambit of that, but Texas Tech does not want to.
Does Texas Tech have to what happens if every school says we're not playing you and they have to dump the kid? They still got to pay him?
I think they still have to pay him.
Kevin wants to know, will any NFL teams draft him?
Sure they will. Depends how good his arm is, but yeah, they'll draft
him. They'll draft him with the idea that it's all over. He's been rehab and he's okay.
No, they'll draft him with the idea that he can win and that we can help him.
That worked with Denny McClain and Arch Leister, didn't it?
That's right. Well, so the question... I listened to the NFL Network, and I heard some scouts say, some former scouts say, this kid is going to be a monster distraction anywhere he goes. So you've got a Tim Tebow problem with him right away. But if he's good enough, they'll bring him in. And they'll just prohibit him from...
Who was the other guy that was a big problem? Was it Johnny Quarterback? What was his name? Johnny Manziel?
Manziel was an issue, yeah.
All right, Lou, we got a few minutes. The market is rocketing back and forth in the middle of the day and the rest of the time. Yesterday, we were up... I'm talking about NASDAQ futures, the NQs. We were up something like 350. The day before. And then all of a sudden, because I thought the CPI must have leaked. It turns out, well, who knows? The helicopter got hit, ran into a drone, something happened, and the helicopter went down, and the two guys survived, which is a good thing.
And then we initiated attacks against Iran.
Well, I'm saying during the middle of the day, we ran down 1,200 points. So it was a 1,600 point move. Then came back to being down like 400. Now, the record, when obviously people keep track of highs and lows, but your volatility is determined historically by close to close. Well, the close to close doesn't cut it. Close to close says 400, and it actually was like, 1,500. This, somehow or another, a little between the politics, the war, oil prices, all kinds of crazy stuff, and the market fabric where everybody can just pull all bids and pull all offers. This is reaching an incredible stage here in terms of risk and things. I mean, we, thank God, all the people that I deal with want to be protected. We don't ever have to pile into something like that. It's not always the best for us, but it's we don't have to go panicking into something because we're kind of protected beforehand. Execution is a problem, but this... sort of, somehow or another, our people. Well, I don't think they have I won't say a clue, but an understanding of how involved we are with all these other countries. To the extent we don't, yesterday the president said he loves inflation. I don't know if he meant it or what he meant, but maybe we're driving Japan to pony up dollars, which means they got to cash in some of our treasuries to buy their yen because the yen is blowing through 160, which means 160 to the dollar, so it's the opposite of the other ones. Don't we even realize that we owe those idiots, we owe the Japanese $1.1 trillion, and we don't even seem to care. I mean, this all is tied together somehow, and I don't sense anybody kind of putting it all together, or am I just being cynical?
I think there is an appreciation, at least at the very high senior levels, in the government, of the interconnectivity that we're looking at. I don't know how much of that gets briefed to the decision makers, but I know, for example, that we were well aware of the insurance issue with the tankers, for example, and that we apparently...
And when you say we, I'm sure there's people there that do. It's not just me. But we's getting listened to, I guess, is my question.
Well, they are because, for example, apparently the United States, have brought more than 1,000 transits or vessels, transit through the Straits of Hormuz, and we've done it under the aegis of that insurance program that we set up, what was it, a month and a half, 2 months ago? So somebody in the government not only understood the insurance risk issue that was going to surface as soon as the war started, when Lloyd's pulled all their insurance out, we were prepared to step in with our own insurance program, and apparently it's working, to some degree.
I mean, I is that something anybody wants to do, that we start a war and then we insure all the ships? I mean, that's insanity.
I'm just telling you this. You asked, are they aware of these interconnections? I think one of the reasons that we stopped and put the ceasefire in place, and despite the provocations, was the result of a number of the Gulf states saying, we don't have the capability to protect our assets, and if these idiots, the Iranians, start attacking us again, we can't protect them, and so we need you to back off, don't take down any more of their economy so that they're not shooting at us anymore. Now that's still in place to some extent, because we haven't unleashed a major attack on Iran since. We've done piecemeal stuff in response to some of the things they've done.
But
the interconnectivity is there. That's restraining. I think that's restraining us. I think it's definitely restraining it's definitely a part of our trying to restrain the Israelis.
They don't seem restrained at all to me.
Oh yeah.
How do you know?
How do I know?
Yeah.
Because if they had been given full bore, we would have seen attacks on Iranian leadership and polity to such an extent that their society would have stopped functioning. We would have seen attacks on desalinization plants. We would have seen attacks on power plants. We would have seen attacks on infrastructure that would have effectively shut the country down. And they're not doing it.
I don't know.
They have the capability to do it.
They have it because we gave it to them, and we were regretting
it. It doesn't matter. You asked me whether they were being restrained. They are being restrained.
Well, okay. I guess they could always be worse or better. I mean, it's hard to judge something like that. But this whole idea
the Israelis have a much better concept of what it takes to operate over there than we do, frankly. And they are not constrained by the idea that there's a deal to be made out there.
They just want more and more land.
No, they've given up land.
They
gave up the Sinai. They gave up Gaza. They turned them back to.
All right. Well, I mean, I don't want to get a debate about what those guys are doing. Netanyahu is not my favorite person. The whole idea in Lebanon. They're telling people to go in after Hezbollah, and in fact, they're in Christian areas, aren't they?
They're clearing out areas where Hezbollah has operated, and to get to some of those areas, they have to move through other areas. I mean, they're occupying space. The Christians are quite frankly happy to see them come in.
Oh well,
believe me, they are.
Okay.
Because the Israelis are not theocratic maniacs, unlike Islam, unlike Hezbollah, the elements of Hezbollah. So anyway,
I mean, it's
6 o'clock. I see our guys are here.
Yeah, but so what do you? You guys got any water? Are you gonna fill up Lake Mead, or are you gonna drain Lake Powell, or what are you gonna do?
Those lakes are in trouble. We're getting fairly regular rain, but not a lot of it. But regular rain in the mountains, and so that's helping, I think, keep the fire danger down, which is really what I worry about now. The water issue is already done. Yeah, the snowpack wasn't there. They are predicting a major, potential for a major snowpack next winter, so keep your fingers crossed.
You guys do well in El Niños?
Yeah, the El Niños make a difference for us. El Niño kills us, El Niño helps us.
Amazing
the difference a vowel makes.
Well, because you were neutral this year, that was bad.
Well, it was La Niña, but this was considered to be a La Niña over here.
All right, so, bud, we take care of yourself.
You guys have a good weekend.
SP Futures up 53, NASDAQ Futures up 348. Guys, how are you?
Oh, not bad. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I was, so that picture I sent of the young Babe Ruth, did that look like the young Andrew? I can't say it looked like a young Wayne.
Well, that was fascinating for the reasons you intended it. What did he got something like 130 triples, and he stole home base many times. He was an all-around athlete, and we just mostly know, except for that photo, him in his older pudgy days.
The thing I sent around is a thing on Quora, and where these guys find this stuff. I mean, every picture you see of Babe Ruth, he's got kind of a big belly and the spit. We always had the skinny legs, but this picture was from like 1916 when he was just batting for the when he was in Boston. They said the dude was 6'2", 215 pounds, a solid rock, and was fast as could be. And the idea, the average player was like 5'9", you know, whatever, 165 pounds. He was a man among men. He was like a Shotana, you know, in Japan, for God's sake. Maybe not that extreme. So the idea that he was this fat old guy that could never play today is absolutely wrong. But I never saw a picture of him that young. That's pretty impressive, actually.
Yeah, it was great. Now, one thing that's still a mystery to me, of course, the curveball was a mystery to me when I played high school baseball, but is the bat he used was just totally enormous. And, you know, people like Ernie Banks of the Cubs and Hank Aaron and basically everybody uses much lighter bats, and they managed to get their home runs, whereas he had just an enormous stick of wood.
Was it 42 ounces or something?
50 ounces or something like that.
Now they're, what, 34, maybe 35 most.
Yeah, well, I just raised the question. I don't have the answer on that.
Well, they, you know, you talk about, you know, today's guys versus other guys and what the difference in the pitching, and it's, you know, it's always hard to compare because there's, it's, you know, there's pluses and minuses all the way. Hey, speaking of pluses and minuses, if you guys could tie us into these news coming out of Washington, we could make a lot of money with this market going up and down here.
Well, here's where the big money was to keep up the delay in answer to your question for a second, but even you, as big a sports fan, probably didn't stay up all night to watch the Knicks-Spurs game.
They were losing
29 down.
they were losing bad, and I turned on the Cubs, and it instantly put you to sleep watching the Cubs bat.
So they came back from 29 down with a last-second tip-in where a guy came in taking the ball from out of inbounds with 1.2 seconds left. The Knicks are down 1 point, and Anobly passes it in and just goes for the hoop. And when I think it was Brunson shot a three-pointer over Wembanyama, and Anobly crashes it down. And that's basically the winner.
I thought the game was going to be totally fixed in favor of San Antonio, and I just didn't want to win. I think the NBA is very fixed, but that's just me.
I don't know why Trump isn't supporting the Spurs. After all, didn't the Spurs keep him out of Vietnam?
God.
By the way, I misstated the timing on the clock. There was a couple seconds left for this last shot, and so when it went through the hoop, there was 1.2 seconds. But it was just amazing. And now the Spurs got to win three straight, which, as great as they are, is tough. Because it just emotionally devastating.
Well, they called the two quick ticky-tack fouls on that Towns guy early in the first quarter, and I go, yep, NBA wants, there's no doubt who they want to win this one. They want this thing going seven. That's kind of what I turned it up.
To go to your point, which I endorse, we don't know how far it goes, but at the minimum, wildly inconsistent calling. And everybody's grabbing each other, and you know, if one side is going to grab each other, then the other side is, and then it's just total mayhem in there. And certain rules like traveling or getting into the foul line. I mean, when did it become legal to just jump in after a foul shot and cross the line? They do it all the time.
I think they have some sort of a a deal. I mean, I don't know what the deal is, but they clearly don't want the Stars fouled out in the first half. And I don't know. I mean, they. So
and
they
yet just, they did it to the next center, and he's obviously necessary to stop the Spurs 7'5" center.
Well, that's what I mean. I really think that the NBA wants us to go seven, and their new poster child is this center on San Antonio. And as much, I mean, every game the guy is a dirty hack of somebody, and there's never a flagrant called. I mean, it never gets tossed. We did it actually early on in the playoffs. He got tossed, but I mean, the thing he did to Dunson in the last game, how is that not a flagrant?
Yeah.
But so what? Even you guys are. How does anybody keep track of? Today, one of the headlines is Trump saying, "Love the inflation." what are we even? We had Larissa and Russell on yesterday, and then Larissa, that's what she teaches to people is a lot of home budgeting, you know, accounting for businesses and stuff. How you do this kind of, how you plan ahead, and she says this inflation is kind of nailing everybody. And you know, she said she was in Chicago, took the kids to a few nice places, and if she went for lunch, and there's nobody there. I mean, are we getting any kind of a read on any of this? We're getting at the PPI in a little bit, but it's bad. I mean, does anybody?
And right after he said that, he changed the subject.
Yeah, here's what I was gonna say. This is, and I've actually studied the process. Which goes back to, I think, a mainstream Republican, maybe from 70 years ago, and it was picked up by Roy Cohn, who's Trump's mentor, and, of course, Roger Stone, who is the current one. And it's encompassed by three words: deny, deflect, denounce. And so the concept is any issue that comes up, particularly one that's embarrassing, deny involvement, deflect to a new topic, and then denounce the opposition. And if you keep changing the topic, as you pointed out on the inflation matter, but it's really everything, nobody's got time to follow up on the original issue.
Well, This is probably an old guy question. Maybe it's for me. I went on TV and I didn't know where the camera was, so Audrey was denouncing me because I looked like I was Dick Nixon shifting my eyes. I go, I didn't know where the camera was. At least I had an excuse. But I listened to Besant, and for whatever reason, I listened to the guy in front of Congress twice last week, and I don't actually understand. Well, the first one was you hear him with Elizabeth Warren. And she read some testimony from him in front of Congress. Was it a year ago where he was ranting and raving about people in Congress trading stocks?
Right.
So she reads this back to him, and then she says, "Well, the president traded 3,500 stock trades in the first quarter. Like, what do you think about that?" And he says, guess what he said? I mean, you guys probably heard it. He goes, "You need to get your house in order." And she goes, "What are you talking about? I didn't make any trades. What do you mean? My house is fine." and he must have said it four times. And finally she says, "You know, the president in one quarter traded half as much as all of Congress in the last, was it year or two? We're not even on the same planet." He just kept looking at her saying, "You need to get your house in order. This is not,
if you've noticed, that's every time an administration official testifies, either before the Senate or House, it's confrontational.
Yeah.
It's things, they say things now that would have been found in contempt of Congress not that long ago and been looking at maybe some jail time. But, you know, this is just...
Well, did you hear the next one when the lady started quizzing him about the $250 bill? Did you guys catch that one?
No.
This is priceless. She goes, "Are you aware there's like a law that says in order to get on like a bill, you got to be dead?" And he goes, "Oh, yeah, there's a law." She goes, "Well, from what I understand, you've got people you've already getting the artist's rendition of Trump's face to go on the bill. You've already having people design it, and you've already like got engravers working at it. He goes, well, yeah. He goes, and we also got we're trying to change the law. She says, but the law isn't changed. And why are you spending all this money and this time on something that, you know, hopefully probably won't even pass? And his answer was, unlike the last administration's Secretary of the Treasury, I don't wait around and do stuff at the last minute. I get ahead of the game. They never did. He turned it into a criticism of Biden's Secretary of the Treasury, whatever the hell that even was. How did that get in there at all?
Just standard operating procedures.
How does the guy go home and his wife or his daughter or a friend or his son say, Dad, you look like a moron on TV today. What's the matter with you? Where is the feedback? It's so bad. I mean, you know, I...
Well, for one thing, there's no wife and daughter for...
Well, there is a husband. There is a husband.
I was not aware of that.
As a matter of fact, he's been likened to... I don't know if you remember some of these old cartoons when we were growing up, but there was one, Snagglepuss but the thing on Snagglepuss, he was like an out of work former Broadway actor and performer, and he was always getting into trouble, and then with this high-pitched kind of voice, it'd say, oh, exit stage left.
Oh, I remember
and people have pointed out that Besant sounds a lot like the guy who's doing the Snagglepuss voice. So
you know, my brother convinced he sounds like. You remember the movie Man Who Shot Liberty Valance?
Oh yeah.
Remember the guy? Whenever Liberty would say something, the dumb guy would always laugh at his joke. Hey, I got a question.
I laughed at your joke.
Well, hey, I got a question for you. I was supposed to bring this up with Lou, but we got involved in education or something. And I was kind of surprised. I mean, I don't know that much. I mean, I remember the incident where Massey got up and was talking about when the Israelis sunk our ship over there. What's the name of the ship?
Yeah, it was the USS Liberty. Yeah. It was actually assigned to the National Security Agency. Years ago, some of the crew... survivors showed up at the National Press Club, and I went to their news conference. Some of them were still in bad shape. The Israelis killed 34 U.S. Navy personnel, and that included actually a couple of civilians from NSA who were counted as military. But the Israelis claimed they didn't know that it was an American ship. That's pretty much been debunked. Israeli planes, I think they were French fighters, first attacked the ship. It was off the coast of. This was during the Six-Day War, if you recall, the ship was kind of equidistant between the Sinai coast and the Israeli coast, and they were eavesdropping on Israeli and Egyptian communications, and the Israelis had to have known it was an American ship because they shot the flag off, which was the U.S. flag, which was a small flag. The captain said, "Put up the holiday pennant," which is a much larger American flag, and they still continued to attack the ship.
They ended up torpedoing it too, right?
They did. They brought out some naval vessels that hit it with torpedoes. Now the bad thing is all this was being monitored by the Sixth Fleet, which is the fleet we have in the Mediterranean from the island of Crete. And the USS America, the aircraft carrier, was all set to launch its aircraft to take out Israeli airfields in Ashkelon and a couple others in retaliation. LBJ called them back. And the worst thing is when the Liberty limped into port in Malta, it was all shot up.
It didn't sink.
It did not sink, no.
But there was strafing of...
They were strafing survivors in the water.
But even with the torpedoes and stuff, the thing still ran?
Yeah, it was in bad shape. And that was to the credit of the damage control people on the ship that they kept it afloat. But the Congressional Medal of Honor was awarded to Captain McGonigal, the CEO. But Johnson didn't want to do it in the White House. He did it at the Washington Navy Yard because he didn't. And it was in secret, and he didn't want to perturb the Israelis by having a White House ceremony. This whole thing was one of the biggest cover ups in U.S.
So what is Massey trying to
history.
Do now?
Huh?
What's Massey trying to do now by bringing?
Well, they had their reunion.
Yeah, I know.
They had their reunion this week.
Yeah.
In fact, I got a last minute invitation to it by a concerned, source or citizen from Texas who came up for it. But it was is just so much going on, I couldn't get over there. But I asked him to send me a photo, which he did, and they had about 9 survivors who try to keep the story alive, and Massey was in the photo with them. So
he brought him into Congress with him.
Yeah, and he also made a statement on the floor of the House.
I heard it. Yeah, it was a serious thing.
Massey, of course, he's claiming that he was done in his primary by AIPAC, which gave his opponent all kinds of money. So this is for Massey, I guess, is like, what are you going to do to me now? You've already did it, so I'm going to...
Well, what is the mechanism? You guys are close to this. I mean, how all this stuff, I get the part that they wanted in the rearview mirror. But what is the process where somebody gets together and says, well, this is pretty bad, but you know what?
We might segue to the Epstein case, which I got heavily involved in this week, and later today I'm having lunch with 6 survivors of the Epstein scandal later today. But the process is the advisors say, this looks bad. How do we kill it? How do we kill the story? And the reason I have half a dozen books on the Liberty that we just happened to bring up is you want to get all points of view, or at least I do. So most of them are of the expose nature, but a couple are of the debunking nature, say, no, it's just an accident, nothing to see here. But I want to see those books too. So the advisors say, well, maybe we got to give people an award, but let's do it in secret, as Wayne pointed out. So that's an ongoing process. And just to flip, if you're amenable to the Epstein thing, the New York Times yesterday published excerpts from a new book, and it talks all about the White House strategies to basically kill release of the files of the Epstein sex trafficking scandals. And it's very in-depth. And it happens that documents that were released, thanks to Congressman Massey, in very significant part, according to a law that was almost unanimously passed by Congress last fall, these documents are being showcased in a mobile exhibit here in Washington until the end of this week. And it's very powerful, very impressive, and it by coincidence, matches exactly the timeline of this big New York Times.
I was trying to get into the New York Times thing yesterday, but I had to sign up for New York Times to get it or something. But I guess my curiosity here is, who decides? I mean, how would anybody decide? Okay, something bad happens. I mean, how the hell are we going to... How can I explain this Liberty thing? Guys are dead. They attacked it four times, not once. It wasn't like a strafe, and then everybody waved, oops, we screwed up, can we help? I mean, it was clearly not that. It was relentless. Yeah. I mean, it was absolutely relentless. I mean, that appears
well,
to be the...
Yeah, well, LBJ knew what actually happened, but he's quoted as saying, and this is not a quote that he probably wanted to be remembered for. He said... remember, this was in 1967. He was still planning to run for re-election the following year in 68. And he said, I don't want that GD ship to endanger my support from the well-placed Jewish Americans. He was concerned about campaign contributions. And that's why he wanted to bury what happened to the Liberty.
But I'm having a problem even answering the question, asking the question here. But what is the formula for if we can, a month from now it will be less, if we make sure there's no other articles, there's no reinforcement of the issue, 6 months from now, 80% of the people won't even remember it, and a year from now, you know, whatever. As long as it doesn't keep percolating up. And I think that was the problem with Whitewater, except it kept percolating up.
And, okay, here's the formula. Again, it's deny, deflect, denounce. And so you have, that's the playbook. And so the advisors try to apply it to new situations, but sometimes it doesn't work. So this is art, not science. And so in the case of the Epstein files, which, by the way, this roving library that's here in D.C. for the week, and I attended their event yesterday, too, they're calling it the Trump Epstein files because of the pervasive presence of Trump in... hundreds of thousands of times in the 3.5 million pages already released, and it's suspected or described by victims yesterday, and I met some of them also yesterday, that there's double that amount. So you're talking about 7 million pages of references, and remember that Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, to quash this last fall, basically put the House of Representatives on adjournment for, what was it, at least a month, probably more, because he did not want to permit a vote led by Massey to release the documents. But ultimately, the House had to come back, and by then, their plan of the geniuses to suppress things failed, and all but one member of the House and Senate voted to release the files, and Trump had to sign the law to release the files, and now they don't want to.
Chief, you asked about how the decisions are made at the White House. According to this New York Times story, they didn't want Trump to know they were deliberating what to do, so they met in the White House Situation Room, which is normally where you meet when there's a major crisis happening. Well, this was a crisis, but not like a, you know, impending war or something like that. And the word is that his chief of staff, Susie Wiles, who I think is probably going to leave later this year, she wanted to try to curtail what was going to be released. And And J.D. Vance, on the other hand, wanted, like, full disclosure, including something very, very salacious about Trump mutilating a young girl. And that, I think, is now playing out between us, this contest between Marco Rubio and Vance to see who's going to get the nod to be the 28 GOP standard bearer.
We got a break here, but kind of think about this. In general, you know, I want to talk about this like you guys do, but I want to talk about the stuff Wayne has dug up regarding. I'm to be honest with you, much more concerned about the money laundering aspects of this. The other stuff's disgusting.
Oh yeah.
But you know, well, it's not done. The ladies are still alive and still have scars to prove it. But just in general, what is? I'll give a really stupid example here. You know, Trump goes out in the middle of the night and pees in the middle of Pennsylvania Avenue. Okay, okay. So I guess it's a story. You know,
he actually does that in public, but we don't get to see it.
Okay, but I'm saying, you know, but then, you know, at some point a week later, you go, hey, you got to go, you got to go. I mean, there's a degradation to the whole thing that yeah. must have some sort of a pattern to it. And what you don't want is 3 weeks from now, somebody come up with yet another picture of the same thing, and 4 weeks from now, another. But I guess I want to get a sense of, what if that doesn't happen? If you can put it out on a Friday night when everybody's heading out to the bar and not,
yeah.
I mean, what is the normal degradation of a story to where 2 years from now nobody goes, oh yeah, I remember that vaguely. What the hell was that all about again? I mean, there has to be some. But let's talk about that after break. SP Futures up 27. NASDAQ Futures up 197. We've dropped precipitously from where we were earlier, but still up. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Can your IRA stand up to the next financial crisis that our top economists are saying is at our doorsteps? By allocating a percentage of your IRA into physical gold and silver with a tax-free rollover, you can diversify and safeguard your holdings from turbulent markets and economic downturns by putting your IRA back on the gold standard. Find out how to safeguard your assets with a tax-free rollover with a Genesis Gold IRA, the only IRA that can hold physical precious metals. Call now for your free gold and silver report. Protect your IRA today with one simple phone call and learn how to qualify for up to $10,000 in free silver. Call Genesis Gold Group, empowering faith-driven stewardship. 800-679-5797. 800-679-5797. 800-679-5797. That's 800-679-5797.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everybody, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Jimmy on the board. SP Futures up 30, NASDAQ Futures up 215. We were up higher than that. Trump just said we're going to take Karg Island and other infrastructure, evidently. I don't know if that means boots on the ground. He didn't say that, but how do you do that without doing that? Anyhow, over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 59.2%, FTSE up 96.9%. It's a pretty good big move for those guys. CAC round up 77.9% as well. So the DAX is lagging there a little bit. Nikkei up 38, boy, call that flat. Hang Seng down 158.6%. Shanghai down 6, call that flat. Stocks rebound as chip stocks bounce. But gain limited as oil rises on Trump comments. We've got bonds unchanged, 4.54 in the 10-year. Japan, 2.68. They're already kind of changed there. Oil, however, up, it's down 51 cents, 89.52, so it's not really much here. I don't know what the headline was saying. Gold, which can't get out of its own way, almost under 4,000 here, down 34 bucks, 4,098. Silver down a buck, 63.74. Foreign exchange, Japan, 160.56, again, way above their 160 panic spot. The dollar is strong, 115.2 with the pound. And no, I'm sorry, 115.2 with the euro and 133 with the pound. Crypto up 681, so maintaining above the 60,000 number, 62,533. Although this MicroStrategy stock, it's up this morning a little bit. It's down to 117. That thing is wobbling a little bit. That makes me nervous. Jimmy, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Well, in traffic on the inbound, Kennedy, it's 20 minutes. And the inbound, 4 minutes. And the inbound, Eisenhower, 32. And Dan Ryan is 21. And in Phoenix, it's just hot. It is 83 degrees with a high of 108. And it's sunny. Chicago is pretty much the same. We are going to, right now, the temperature is 85 degrees with a high of 88. Now, we do have thunder showers throughout the afternoon. In the sports, obviously, Cubs lose, Sox win. And the Sticks pulled out a win last night. So the series now goes back to San Antonio, and the Knicks can actually win. I do have a quick question in regards to what Lou had mentioned. Israel took the Sinai and then gave back the Seahawks. They still haven't given back the Golan Heights, nor have they given control of Jerusalem.
But yeah, they haven't done any of that.
They have not, but back to you.
So, guys, I don't want to beat this up because I want to get more to the Epstein stuff, but there must be a formula someplace that says, okay, if you can keep it out of the press, it degrades at a certain, or at least there's a sense of how much stuff degrades, because there's always new stuff, right?
Let me tackle that. Yes, the formula is release it Friday night. This is actually an intelligence term. That became popular in Watergate, a limited hangout. So you release some small part of it on just before a holiday or on a Friday night before a holiday weekend and hope it goes away. The thing about the Epstein stuff is there's actually so much of it that it keeps coming back like the Terminator or, Dracula or something.
Hey, Andrew, do us a favor. Back yeah. when people lob out 7 million pages, what are they? Are they emails? Are they documents?
Yeah, they're emails. So, for example, yesterday we had two very interesting witnesses on Capitol Hill. And actually, I was up there, but it was closed hearing, so you couldn't see it in the Rayburn Building. But you had Bill Gates there. You know, he's Microsoft. You had Leslie Goff,
that's why he got divorced, right? Gates?
Yeah. Well, we won't get too much into details, but as an overview, you had the person who arranged appointments for Epstein for years was testifying also, and she's mentioned thousands of times. I forget how many thousands of times, but she's making appointments. And here's a very important, maybe two points. One, this ties together because Wayne and I and others who are looking at this realize it's at least as much a financial scandal and network as sex. And the other thing you mentioned in passing, the girls, well, there's also boys involved because some of these people were homosexuals, including Epstein's main funder, who is well known as a philanthropist and businessman, but associated with clothing lines like The Gap and Victoria's Secret. But
richest man in Ohio, right?
Yeah, a big donor to the...
By the way, wholesale prices up 1.1%. That's why we're crapping out here a little bit. SP Futures only up 20 now. 1.1% is a lot. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. So, at any rate, when people try to kill this story and some others, and it works for a while because people think, well, they know what it is. It's... sexual attacks by Epstein against girls. Well, no. You expand it to boys, you expand it to a network of some of the richest and most prominent.
And I would add that Wexner intersects with the other scandal in Ohio, which was the the sports doctor at Ohio State, where Jim Jordan was the assistant wrestling coach. There were
Jim
hundreds.
Jordan, the House Judiciary Chairman right now.
Yeah.
By the way, goods are up 2.8% and services up 0.3%. Ouch on that one.
The strategy, and this seems to be, to jump around a little bit, just to comment on your jump here, Trump is his own strategist, so they may have these meetings, like Wayne referred to in the New York Times, where they meet in the Situation Room without Trump, and J.D. Vance and the Chief of Staff have different views how to handle the scandal. But Trump comes out, and what did he say yesterday, that inflation's not a problem? They talk about when you're your own lawyer, that's not good. Well, he's his own strategist, and he thinks it's working.
Now, here where I think is where this thing's going, and I think the New York Times story is opening the door to this. If Trump is now more favorable to Rubio as his successor in 28, but Vance is still the only other constitutionally elected officer in this administration as vice president, it would behoove Vance to maybe start talking about the 25th Amendment as a way to, no pun intended, or maybe pun intended, as a way to trump Rubio's prospects. We may be into a Game of Thrones type scenario here.
To get back to I think that there's some people, by the way, that you've brought out, so I blame you. I find all the stuff they did with the women pretty much abhorrent. Somebody somewhere has got the goods on maybe Trump, maybe a bunch of people from Saudi Arabia. It looks to me that somebody's got, films or documents or something. Who the hell knows?
But absolutely. Netanyahu would have them.
Yeah. and Putin, it's the Justice Department has it. So yesterday, let me amplify a little bit what this meeting was. I kind of crashed it, but it was supposed to be a briefing for congressional staff by victims. And, I'm not congressional staff, but I found my way.
Yeah, but you could play one on TV.
I played one yesterday, and then I admitted who I was at the end and agreed to keep stuff more or less confidential, except mentioning the fact that the meeting occurred maybe here on the show. But the information is out. It's in the 3.5 million pages that were released. It's on the internet. Now, a lot of information has been redacted by the Justice Department, and we know that Epstein had 9 cameras just for the outside of one of his mansions, and we know that the massage room and the interiors also had cameras. So what happened to that stuff? Well, the Justice Department hasn't. And that's the kind of stuff that people are saying, well, what the heck was somebody like Bill Gates doing there? And Gates says, well, we don't quite know what he says because it's behind closed doors. But all of this gets into the worlds of Wall Street, obviously, high tech, philanthropy, academia, European royalty, and not just Prince Andrew, but they have multiple royalty, Norway and elsewhere, involved in this stuff. And here's something I found out that I'll just share quickly. It's the last point. One of the things Wayne and I have been looking at in recent year particularly is that this is a multi-generational scandal. So people want to focus, okay, Epstein girls. No, it goes back. It's he's better thought of as a very important cog in a larger process. And people like Massey know that belatedly, and that's why he's pursuing it, because the wheel is what the public wants to know about, not just the salacious stuff.
See, I'm going to throw one back at you there. I'm going to say the reason why I asked the question earlier, when I see this stuff, and it's all about, you know, well, first of all, Bill Gates has every ability, I mean, hell, we all do if we wanted to, of going to a brothel in Vegas.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting a massage with a happy ending. I would think, now, why did people have to go to this guy? Why does the head of a gazillionaire corporation have to go there? Well, they want to do stuff overseas. They probably want to move money. They maybe want to sell stuff to places you're not supposed to sell stuff. And guess what? People get money there. I'm going to run this one by you. I think that those people that are that part of this thing that Wayne's talked about, and you too, Andrew, I think they want the focus to be on, let's try and spend the next 2.5 years getting Trump in a bad picture or worrying about the sex and stuff. They would much rather have the other stuff be forgotten.
Yeah.
And then the sex stuff move forward, because that appears to be what's selling. I mean, the first thing when people, this mobile van pulls up, somebody jumps in there, the first thing they're going to look is for a naked 16-year-old with Trump. Okay. Well, you know, maybe they'll find it. Yeah. Maybe they won't. I don't think Trump was ever on the island, although I think he was at their house and whatever. I think Trump is a sexual creep. So I don't know that. I'm more concerned about the people that are doing all the laundering money, especially when we're supposedly having sanctions on countries. I'm more concerned about those people right now than I am about, you know.
And those people are also concerned, because one of the things, see, this is actually a crowdsourced investigation. I don't think we've ever seen anything to this extent. It's people that have websites and podcasts, people in the U.S., people in the far-flung corners of the world, all looking at the same or different parts of this huge scandal. Some people now have successfully linked, I don't know if you remember the big Panama Papers disclosure about all these offshore entities. It was based on people getting in to the files of this Fonseca Mossack law firm in Panama.
Oh, yeah. I heard something very vague.
Yeah, yeah, and now there are people that specialize in this type of thing, looking at the Epstein files and looking at the Panama Papers, and are putting together what you just mentioned, that this other financial network that surrounded Epstein and his associates. So we're getting into, you know, that area with, you know, more of a focus on the financial interests at play, which get into the blackmail too. And of course, none of this is being pursued by this administration, but we're seeing now criminal investigations being opened up in European and other countries.
Well, we seem incapable of doing that here somehow.
Well, here's very specifically, these victims who were, you know, horrified at their reputation being smeared, they still want release of the documents with, you know, maybe their names out. But as one has said, look, the law states that everything is supposed to be released except the victims' identities, and instead, for some of us, our identities, and in some cases nude photos, were released, and many of the predators are blacked out, and people are trivializing this as, oh, it doesn't matter. They ruin the lives of 1,000+ victims, and they're not all girls, as I mentioned before. So the financial ties go into this, and in some sense, everything except maybe the New York Knicks victory that we've talked about on the show ties together. So when we were talking about the Treasury Secretary earlier in the show saying, well, basically we don't obey the law because we may change the law, here's a law that the Justice Department is clearly violating, and they're just nominated Todd Blanche, who's Trump's lawyer, to be permanent attorney general. And undoubtedly the rationale is, just because there's a law, we don't like the law, and we're going to change the law so we don't have to obey the law in the meantime.
Well, plus, he's never going to bring up the 25th Amendment. Count on
yeah,
that.
No, that's for sure. Also, just yesterday, the Miami New Times, which is an alternative paper to the Miami Herald, which I have to say, thanks to Julie Brown with the Miami Herald, she did a lot of this footwork, early investigations, and brought this thing back to life. This whole Epstein story, but the Miami New Times now has a story not based on the Epstein files that Donald Trump was holding parties with, you know, underage kids, which turned into like orgies at his place, at his places in Florida. So this thing is starting to take on more of a life of its own.
Well, but I'm saying the more it veers there, the more it kind of veers the direction, I'd rather have it go another direction. I want it to go your direction.
Well, I think maybe it can do all those things because I think there's enough chum in the water now.
The main thing still sort of lands. I mean, as I do the show every day, I don't know if you guys have any chance to listen, but you get all these different points of view from different people, and they sort of are kind of coming together in some regard.
Yeah.
I mean, Carl Ranson raves. I mean, he wants to shoot everybody and everything, but you know, Carl's Carl, but he's terrific. And I listen and I understand where he's coming from. But my question is, what if? I mean, he talks about, you know, antitrust. I talk more about antitrust, but he talks about, you know, the medical industry and how many times people actually have said, you know, this thing is a cure for something, and oh, by the way, it actually hurt people, and nobody ever gets prosecuted, nobody ever gets fined. Companies, I mean, you look at it, whichever direction you turn, you see, you know, massive, you know, no goodniks out there, for lack of a better term, and nobody ever seen, and you see it now on the street, nobody stops at a stop sign. I mean, certainly on a bike. I mean, you know, it's becoming endemic from the bottom up, because we don't see anybody getting spanked anywhere. I mean, and the question is, if somebody was elected somehow to do that, the dude would need, I'm not saying ICE agents, the dude would need a secret police.
Oh, they get death threats all the time, I think.
No, I'm talking about to go apprehend all these people.
Yeah,
If you went to, every hospital,
or at least you'd have to have a totally reformed federal law enforcement structure. And how long would that take?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, we've antitrust laws. We got the Clayton Act. We've had a couple of Supreme Court decisions about hospitals. I mean, Trump just put out last week, which he should said, we're going to start fining hospitals for not putting their prices out there. Well, that's been a law for friggin' 50 years. I mean, does somebody have to walk into every single hospital group and march the board out in handcuffs? I mean, it's almost we've reached that stage. Wherever you look, it's, you know, not the start with all the money launderers. Okay, let's start there. I mean, does anybody really think that the, who's our Commerce Secretary, the guy from Cantor Fitzgerald? What the hell's his name?
Lutnick.
Yeah. Now, does anybody actually think that the guy brought his family to Epstein's Island so he could tell the wife I'm going to the bathroom and have a quickie with a 15-year-old? He's there to find out about, hey, I got clients that need me to get, you know, I'm guessing. I got clients who need me to get money to Russia. I can't do it. Can you help me? I mean, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's.
Right.
Yeah. Well, arrogance. And the key thing, he was caught lying, and there's no consequences except it's, you know, more or less blown over. A few of us remember because he said he cut ties, a long time ago, and then he takes his family there to see Epstein.
Well, I'm saying, if you actually went after all the antitrust, if you looked at what Amazon does, puts people out of business. They'll take a retail on there, and if it's popular, all of a sudden they start to produce it themselves. All this stuff these are all crimes. Yet nobody, there's no chance of anybody getting caught anywhere. What if you actually decided to do it? How many people would you need, and how popular would you be?
You're talking maybe something like what preceded the Secret Service was the Pinkerton Detective Agency. You might have to outsource this to a. This may be. You get a hard charging president and administration in there. You say, well, you know, I have what you need. We've got people that can go out and make the arrests and the bounty hunters and everybody else.
Well, and by the way, that's maybe a backstory to this. They just signed the law to fund ICE for the rest of Trump's term. But we in the public really have very little guarantees that these people behind the masks doing the raids have really any training that we'd expect from law enforcement. And the suspicion is it's almost like a private army with people in masks who claim that they're under authority, but
Well, some people pointed out their training may have been as January 6th.
Well, some of them are, and we don't know because they're in masks. But
Andrew, didn't the guy who's supposedly in charge of their training, didn't he testify before Congress like 8 weeks ago? And he said, "Yeah, we truncated the whole training."
Yeah. Well, here's something that just happened. Vellis, a big Chicago story, so I want to mention it, even though it's kind of buried, but it's important. So the big raids on Broadview and so forth, and the prosecutions of some political people, including a woman running for Congress, Kat, I can't pronounce her last name, or Brunjuk, something like that, it's come out gross misconduct in the grand jury. The under a federal court order, the normally secret grand jury transcripts were just released, and it became clear that the prosecutors violated all kinds of Justice Department and legal rules in trying to get grand jury indictments. And I was just reading that they didn't like one of the grand jurors because he said, isn't this the same stupid indictment you tried to bring last week? And they said, you're excused, sir.
you read the paper, you're excused.
And she, leave the room. You're excused, leave the room. And then she said, do we still have enough? And the judge looking at this is saying, what kind of federal prosecution is this? And the last part I'll just add of this revelations, which is pretty recent, is that it was clear that they were going after not the most guilty people of jostling an official's car during the protests, but the people who are identified by social media as Democrats, influencers, or politicians who were nearby on the scene. And this is absolutely not the way the criminal justice prosecutions are supposed to work. Let's see who's there, what their party is, and indict.
There's people that say these people, beside the mask, beside their lack of training, despite their politics, despite their rampant racism, they're the man, and you can't, if you mess with the man, if you get shot, it's okay.
Well, okay.
I didn't say I believe that. I'm saying, but there are people that do.
No, we know that, and those of us who are kind of in the news or at least commentary business, we make decisions. And one I tried to make today on a site I edit is sending a bunch of refugees from Iran to Congo. They just rounded them up. These are political refugees in the U.S. who are under threat of death from Iran, and we just sent them to the Congo, where they have no ties whatsoever. They've got the latest epidemic, deadly epidemic down there. And
Andrew, is that the FBI calling you?
Somebody seems to want to get me, and we're busy here. But how big is it that some refugees here are sent to the Congo? Well, I don't know. It's pretty bad for them. It's bad if there's no real legal process that anybody can.
And a lot of fans coming to see the World Cup have been turned away because something in their social media was discovered and they negative towards Trump. So all the money they spent on tickets, hotel reservations, all that out the window. They're not allowed to come see their teams play.
I'll answer it, I think, fairly easily. If you actually read the Declaration of Independence, you'd say you can't do stuff like that. But if you've absolved it to the point where only citizens, only like white people get those kinds of treatment, anybody else can do whatever you want to, then you have a different point of view.
Well, it's really an amazing founding documents we have, but we're getting out of time close to here, but to have a little irony, of course, we're hosting Iran now in the World Cup, assuming
they got to stay in Mexico at night, though. They're not allowed to stay here overnight.
And, of course, here in Washington, we got the big UFC championships that, are closing off all the streets. And my goodness.
Oh, God. Well, you know, if you could get us info to tie all this together, the gambling and everything, if you could get us info that the Iranian team is going to be in prison when they get here, I would bet on the other team.
Well, Polymarkets just was investigated, and a story came out last Friday about how suspect their political prediction markets are. And just yesterday, they announced that they will no longer entertain betting on political markets. Maybe a little more to it. But the problem is, if you allow gambling and predictions when some of the people are obvious insiders.
that'll be like gambling in Rick's Cafe in Casablanca.
Well, you guys, I think you do. We'll run a minute here. If you get on DraftKings and you bet, and you have inside information, and you start cleaning DraftKings out, they care because you're winning the money from DraftKings. Right, but now in these prediction markets, they act as an exchange. They just match up buyer and seller. They don't really care if you've got the information, the other guy doesn't. It's almost like the New York Stock Exchange really doesn't care if you buy IBM and somebody sells it to you and it goes up $5 that day and you're a winner and the other guy's a loser. That's up to you. I mean, it's a different brand of ball. But obviously we have all kinds of rules in place regarding, you know, transactions and stocks and on the markets, and it's actually very straight. I mean, that's what I do for a living. Which isn't to say there aren't some people that have information. I mean, you can see it all the time, every day now. But by and large, there, you know, people, it's a straight game. Where the prediction markets, they don't really care if the guy going to Venezuela the night before bets a $100,000 bet and some other idiot takes it. What do they care? They get a fee on both sides, right?
Yeah, well, they may not, but I think what's going on, if people think it's totally all rigged, then they won't participate at all.
True.
So there is an interest in maintaining overall rules. In fact, just to keep the last few seconds of Chicago focus, I was reading somewhere, or maybe I heard it on the show, that before the Black Sox scandal in 1919 of gambling in the World Series, it was common that ball players and gamblers would hang out, and they're all underpaid, and nobody seemed to care about it that much, which is why it was such a surprise when the Chicago White Sox suffered draconian punishment from a former federal judge, Kennesaw Mountain Landis, who banned Shoeless Joe for life.
He also banned black people. He was a big racist.
Yeah, he was from Georgia, I think, originally.
Well, I mean, you when you talk about insider information, I mean, it's in, and I said how, you know, straight the stock market is, which, you know, it is. But I mean, to be honest, if I were to say, if people thought I knew something, and I were to say, man, oh man, this IBM is a tremendous buy here, 271, which I never would say, because A, I'm not a stock picker, and B, I don't know your portfolio, so I don't know if it's right for you, so you're never going to get me to give investment advice on the air. Now, A, I can't do it, and B, I wouldn't do it even if I could. But if I were to do that, and all of a sudden I was world-renowned as the IBM guru, which I surely am not, and somebody calls in here to say, buy me 500 shares of IBM, or calls Merrill Lynch, or, you know, whoever, Schwab, you don't feel it's your obligation to tell the poor guy who sold it to you that, by the way, did you hear that this chief guy just recommended IBM? Everybody who makes a trade on the New York Stock Exchange think they know more than the guy on the other side of the trade, right? That's the nature of the beast. If you thought the stock was going up and you buy IBM, which is the reason why people buy IBM, right? I think it's going up. If you think it's going up, do you ever tell the other guy, hey, you really shouldn't sell it to me because I'm right? Whoever says that. but right, you always think you know more than the other guy. Correct?
Oh, that's right.
I mean, otherwise, why would you buy it? You guys, always a pleasure. So, do you have a skybox for this wrestling event, Andrew?
No, I'm actually leaving town later today. I'm glad to miss it because it's all around me, and all the streets are going to be they're blocked off as of this morning. And the irony is, you got a bunch of tourists around here, and people can't get around. So it limits
Andy's access to the local drinking establishments when they put up those
fences. Next week, if I remember, which you probably hope I don't, I'll regale you with my one night at the wrestling here. And we went with Dr. J, whose dad was actually a doctor. He was Hulk Hogan's personal physician.
I want to hear that. It's looking forward to it.
Funny as all get out. S&P futures up 30, NASDAQ futures up 225. We're still up, even though the PPI number was terrible. Again, 1.1% total. Goods rise 2.8. Ouch. Services increase 0.3. So the services are down a little bit, or not as high as they have been. So I guess that's the good number. But the 1.1 is not good. Thank you, Jimmy. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.